Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can join us once again. And before we get started, I just want to remind you that just because you hear a given tax strategy or two, or you hear about an investment opportunity, please refer to your existing advisors to run things past them, making sure that you heard correctly, and especially making sure that said strategies or investment opportunities might be appropriate for your specific facts and circumstances. For those of you that don't have investor or investment advisors that understand real estate private partnership syndications or real estate taxation or retirement plan rules on how you can use those dollars to invest in real estate private partnerships, or perhaps lastly, they don't work in the zero tax math arena as we do, feel free to connect with us. Best way to work with us is to go to our website at baplanner.com, and you'll notice second link from the top right is a forms link. There's four steps or four forms on that page that you'll be taken to. If you could fill out at least the first one, that'll give us enough to undertake a introductory call with you, and you can book that call at your convenience there on the top right link. Just says call, take you to a call calendar, and you can pick your date and time, and then we'll be happy to undertake a 30-minute introductory call with you. Let's see here. I wanted to go ahead, I guess, and move to the news. As you know, if you've tuned in before, we have a companion website. It's called BeAPlannerShow.com. And on there, I've usually added five or six or seven or so new articles that will be found on the resources tab on that website, baplannershow.com. And by the way, the website to find the forms and schedule a call was baplanner.com, BEAPLANNER. And the companion site simply adds the word show at the end. And if you'll go to the resources link at the top, or the resources tab, you will see a videos and news links under that. And we've got assorted news articles linked back to the publication from whence they came, or the website, as the case may be. And then we've got some videos. I've added a few more since last week. And it's relevant typically with respect to either real estate or the deficit or interest rates, the economy. It's, you know, there's always some interesting opinions out on YouTube and other mediums, and so we'll be adding many more as time goes on, but I've got a few out there. The top video is the one that I refer to quite often as of late when we're talking about deficits. It's a video, about a 30-minute video by Representative David Swikert of Arizona, And boy, does he have some good charts and some good data on just how bad our fiscal health as a nation is. And I would encourage you to take a look at what's out there. At least that 30 minutes on that first video, give that a viewing. And if that doesn't get you motivated to take action to the extent you can to dodge the tax train that's coming, 2029 to 2030 is when it should be here. And I would tell you, you've got at least a couple years, maybe 3 to 4 years even, to make changes that can affect the rest of your life. And typically we want to try to get our pre-tax dollars in a 401k or IRA over to the Roth version of either of those, IRAs or 401ks, and have the ability to eliminate future taxation, at least on those income streams. And you know, unfortunately, you do need to pay the conversion tax on the Roth, and it's far better that you do that after you've gotten your funds rolled over and reinvested in private company investments like the real estate partnerships that we opine on from time to time, so that your tax bill on the conversion goes down dramatically from compared, I guess, to when your investments are held in the stock market. Excuse me. And in any event, the ability to take discount, excuse me, the ability to take some pretty hefty discounts to your cost basis by virtue of being in a private company investment versus a stock exchange traded investment is significant. And at the same time, the tax savings provide you with some downside risk protection, perhaps if you need it or think you do, on the real estate investment itself. But private partnerships involving typically multifamily apartment buildings is what we review and consult with our clients on. And the to summarize what we do in just a few words, we try to help you understand what you're signing up for, and you understand the stack of documents that you're going to be asked to review before you accept or reject a specific opportunity. In any event, let's go ahead and take a look at the news that we've added. And I know it seems like you can't pick up an article about multifamily, you know, announcements of new properties, new construction, etc., without reading or seeing the term affordable, or in the case of this article, it's number one on our list. Apartments are unaffordable for half of U.S. renters. That's a lot of unaffordability, I guess you could say. And, you know, that's becoming, or it's not becoming, it's been an issue. And if you look at this report that's just recently been issued by the Harvard Joint Center for Housing Studies, well, actually, this was, I said recently, this is in 2022, which I guess is likely the most recent data they have, since it takes a while for this to catch up. But it says that according to the Harvard Joint Center for Housing Studies, this represents 22.4 million Americans who are cost burdened by the choices that they had to rent an apartment. In fact, among those renters, 12.1 million were severely cost burdened, paying over half of their incomes for housing and utilities. This surge also represents an all-time high. And, you know, this is a dire situation. I mean, there is no question that part of the, quote, renter nation that the U.S. has turned into is a cost issue. It's not all empty nesters that have decided or have come to the realization that they can rent a much higher standard of living than they can buy. And, you know, we've discussed this more than a few times as of late, where the amenities that you can rent for $2,000 to $2,500 a month far exceed what you would achieve if you bought a $300,000 or $400,000 home. So, you know, it's a nice offset to, one, not having to spend money on a higher interest rate loan and on higher cost of construction, and instead rent a Class A apartment building. And, you know, you'll have the access to audiovisual, you know, multimedia movie theater rooms, and maybe a bark park for your dog, and smart home package in your unit, and maybe covered parking or garage parking, and other amenity sets that have kind of become the norm. And again, you put a lot of that stuff, and I'm also referring to the finishes, you know, stainless appliances, hardwood floors, you put that in a 2,000, 2,500 square foot home, and you're looking at a lot more of a home payment than a couple thousand bucks a month, which is what you can typically rent those spaces for in most of the markets that we're in terms of our radio show. But and it's not just true in America. I'm here in Bangkok, Thailand, and it's double true over here. I mean, we could rent a condo downtown, high-rise building, you know, 10 years or 15 years old for maybe a two-bedroom unit might go for $1,700, maybe less, depending on location, and certainly no more than a couple thousand dollars a month. And that same condo would sell for over $1 million were you to buy it. So I don't know. I've been saying since 1985, when we started our CPA practice, that it, at least in Houston, Texas, it to me always made more sense to rent instead of buying, because the appreciation that you're going to be able to get on that purchase is almost a zero scenario. I mean, I'm not going to say inflation doesn't raise the value somewhat over the years, but yeah, Houston is not known as a market where, you know, your residence, your personal residence, has gone up in values significantly. And I'm not saying there haven't been spots, but I'm just saying, generally speaking, you're better off renting and investing the difference. It's more of a lifestyle choice, I suppose, is how I would explain it. Let's do this. Before we go on to the next article, let's go ahead and take a break, and we will be back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just going through some news, and it's interesting each week just how much news there is that correlates to real estate investing or other commercial endeavors with real estate, be it office, medical facilities, hotels, etc. Our niche is multifamily apartments, and it's what most of our clients are invested in. It's what I personally have invested in, and we understand private partnership syndications, the documents, the projections that you're going to be provided, and we know how to explain them to you. We know how to call it out if the assumption set is out of line with what we know to be the reality in the current multifamily either market, submarket, national economy, etc. And as an example, one area that's been a fairly bright spot in apartment investing is the DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth area. And there was an article, I guess it came out today on GlobeStreet.com showing that Dallas led the nation in job creation for 2023. Still leads the U.S. in employment markets following calculations for 2023. So it's not the first time. It says that, it added more. A Real Page report. Real Page is a real estate data gathering service. It showed that Dallas Plano was the only market to add more than 100,000 jobs in 2023, as it created 101,000. L.A. was the next highest, dealing with 95,800 jobs. And New York, which has traditionally been strong, slipped to number 7. Philadelphia remained in the third spot with 81,000. That's kind of surprising based on all the crime, etc., problems they've had. Boston moved up three spots to number four. Atlanta ticked up one spot to number five. Houston slipped two spots to number six, gaining 70,100 jobs. That's a pretty big difference between Dallas and Houston. Miami came in at number eight, and Las Vegas joined the list at number nine. Phoenix rounded out the top 10. So Southwest and Midwest were well represented on that list, and in any event, but the overall total for the top 10 was down by 22,000 jobs year over year. Probably not bad considering the other things going on in the economy, with interest rates, inflation, seems like rising cost on everything, insurance, property, everything that affects real estate, property taxes, like I say, insurance. I know some apartment buildings, depending on where they were located, had their insurance costs triple, literally, in 2023, or at least between 2022 and 2023. Charleston, South Carolina remained number one when you looked at the percentage gain in new jobs. Charleston's been reporting some strong multifamily data. I know we've talked about Charleston previously. I wasn't sure if it was Charleston, Virginia, or West Virginia at one point. I think the article didn't specify, and I don't know why I wasn't thinking, but I should have known it would have been Charleston, South Carolina, which is apparently a very nice place to live. It's been many years. I think we visited Charleston on a vacation once as a child, and that's a long time ago. Let's see. Major markets with employment declines, always good to look at the other side of the coin, are Denver and Detroit. Memphis was neutral, was unchanged. Sub 1% growth markets include Milwaukee, Columbus, Ohio, Buffalo, Virginia Beach, Des Moines, Chicago, New York, Kansas City, and San Jose. It's you know, all these stats drive development, and it'll be interesting to see. Probably within the next 6 months to a year, Dallas will be rocking again on new developments, kind of slowed just a bit. But you watch, that's going to be the end result in any event. You know, I didn't put this article out on the site. I should have. I'll try to add it shortly here, but there was an article about the Fed is staying steady on no rate increases at the moment. Of course, no cuts either, but the cap rates in the multifamily space are continuing to increase. Not a good thing. And, you know, it should eventually start to decline, but the problem is, as cap rates go up, the value of your property goes down. And so if you're in a position of trying to sell or refinance, the last thing you want is higher cap rates. And so this will be something to keep an eye on. I know that in terms of reviewing transactions, the cap rate is of critical importance, because all too often we see syndicators put out projections that don't have realistic cap rates. And in terms of sensitivity, even a 1% difference in a rational versus an irrational cap rate can mean there's little, if any, money to pass out on distributions to partners. And so it's not just the interest rate that's key. And of course, there is some correlation between interest rates and cap rates. And I guess all I would say is interest rates won't consistently go up without cap rates following. And they may not be in lockstep, but you can rest assured that the higher the interest rate is on the mortgage that a buyer is going to have to pay, or the bank or the lender is going to offer on a refinance, less desirable, the higher, meaning the cap rate's going to be. So, you know, we could do a whole show on the relationship of cap rates, and we probably will do a whole show here at some point in the near future, because you probably hear that term all the time, you read about it, and you may not fully understand what the cap rate represents, but it's key to understand when you're investing whether or not or what the odds may be that you see any money back out of a given investment. And thankfully, it does correlate to the interest rate on a mortgage, so that gives you at least something to keep your eye on in terms of understanding a rational projection when you look at a projection. And if you look at a transaction you're thinking about investing in and the mortgage rate is higher than what you've seen before, but the cap rate hasn't moved from what it might have been a year ago, you know you're not dealing with reality. It's just not reality. And by the way, this article is pointing out something that we've been saying for a year and a half to 2 years now, which is cap rates will not come down nearly as fast as the interest rates will. And the interest rates, while they haven't come down, they've paused. And here you're seeing, and there's a lot of anticipation that the Fed is going to lower interest rates later this year, but the cap rates are still going up. And so, you know, that's what effectively what we've been saying is don't look for the cap rates to come down anytime soon. And again, we need to do a show and explain cap rates in more detail, and we'll try to do that here in the near future. Let's see, of the 15 prime multifamily markets that CBRE tracks, CBRE is one of the largest commercial real estate firms. They lend, they represent buyers and sellers, etc. But 11 saw going in cap rate increases on Q4. That means that when the syndicator bought the property, they were buying at a higher cap rate than what had been the norm. And going in cap rates increased on the fourth quarter of 2023 in Boston, Dallas-Fort Worth, and L.A. saw increases of more than 25 basis points, which would be about 0.25%. The positive spread likely will continue as long as economic conditions do not deteriorate significantly. So the U.S. overall average exit cap rate is not expected to decrease in the near term, so it's unlikely to fall below the going-in cap rate. So, however, they do point out that on a market by market basis, cap rates have already inverted in Chicago and Washington, D.C., though these inversions begin to reverse, it says, in the fourth quarter. So parity between cap rates is now being seen in New York, Philly, Phoenix, San Francisco, and Seattle. And I guess for what that's worth, but I would tell you that cap rates are going to be an issue for at least all of 2024, and I think well into 2025. Let's see here. Next article. The current level of distress in commercial real estate loans is in the news again, and how much is there is the question of the day. Some amount seems to be secret, or some amounts, I think they're saying, as it's not easily identified. Instead of being handled privately without an obvious run on a full run on distressed properties. And then there are properties on the brink, but not yet in the distress category. A group that tracks debt on apartment buildings is MSCI and other asset classes. And MSCI says distress indicates direct knowledge of property level distress, they wrote, known through announcements of bankruptcy, default, or court administration, as well as significantly publicly reported issues such as significant tenant distress or liquidation that would otherwise exemplify property level distress. And, you know, as you know, the hope of every buyer is to buy something that's in distress, be it the property through deferred maintenance, or be it the situation through things like a debt that's got a mandatory refinance on the near horizon, or, you know, ownership in disarray. I mean, there's a number of things that can cause a property level distress, which typically means a buying opportunity for someone that has experience with assessing the asset class involved. But anyway, if you look at the actual distress, it totaled, let's see, this is as of the end of the fourth quarter, 2023, nearly $85.8 billion. But that includes office, it includes some retail, it includes hotels, and includes apartments, one of the smaller classifications. But that's explicitly in property level distress, which means it's not all a known quantity. And in fact, I read just today of a Dallas syndicator of some note, Elevate Commercial is the name of it, that just had a building go into foreclosure. And so that's a pretty, it's a decent sized player. They've done transactions across the U.S., including Houston. And it'll be interesting to keep an eye on those folks to see what else might be in trouble besides the one loan they had with, I believe it was Arbor that had done, that was the lender. Same groups that's foreclosed on, I don't know, at least half a dozen other Houston properties. But in any event, when you look at the geographical disbursement of the distress level, 10.3 billion in the mid-Atlantic, 13.4 billion in the Midwest, 26.9 billion in Northeast, 8.6 billion in Southeast, 9.2 billion in the Southwest, and 16.7 billion in the West. And so, you know, but you got to remember this category of loans doesn't include loans that have been modified privately off the radar, and to keep that basically kept them out of this category. And there's a lot that's happened with, which is not a bad thing at all, because you have to understand loan modification is not that readily available on most of these assets. You know, the DSCRs that are involved, the loan coverage ratio is it's a higher hurdle to climb given, you know, the interest rate impact on cash flow, as well as, like I mentioned, insurance has gone through the roof, property taxes are up, the syndicators are getting hit on all sides. And by the way, when you refinance, you're probably going to get a lower loan to value ratio than you got initially when you bought the property. But in any event, just to put a nice, neat little bow around this, and really the reason I brought this up or put this article out there, is in the fourth quarter of 2023, the value of potential distress added to the market was lower for apartments than any other asset class. Of the $67.3 billion in multifamily potential distress, more than 30% of that value is tied to assets purchased in the last 3 years. Well, that's the three-year bridge debt structure in almost every case, and 2 1-year extensions may be available. Depends on what the debt coverage ratio is that the current business plan is achieving. And you know, but that's no surprise at all that that's where the real mess has occurred. Okay, well, let's go ahead and take our last break, and when we come back, we'll spend a little time looking at the current U.S. debt clock. It's all pointing up for the most part, meaning we owe more money, as you might expect, than we did a week ago. But we'll visit with that here momentarily. We'll be right back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make the
okay, welcome back to the last segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And just to keep you from getting too comfortable as you're getting ready to have lunch, I suppose, let's take a look at the debt clock. You may have remembered it wasn't that long ago, what, a couple weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, that we crossed the $34 trillion level, and that's amazing. But anyway, we're now another $112 billion down the road in just that short amount of time. And for those of you that like to think about how much your share might be. As a taxpayer, your share is about $264,000 of that $34 trillion, if you just break this down pro rata among each U.S. taxpayer. If you break it down to how much debt per citizen, so throw your kids in there, right? You're over the $100,000 mark now, $101,510. That only was achieved here in the last couple months as well, or last month maybe. And so in any event, the U.S. federal budget deficit, the official budget deficit, is now $1.754 trillion for the current, that's your current, I believe that's fiscal year 24. That was the result of the legislation that was just agreed to, even though the appropriations bills haven't been worked out on, I believe, about eight of those. And by the way, if we actually finish the appropriation bills, if Congress does, and they officially pass that budget, that'll be the first budget since 1996 that Congress has passed. Instead of just passing CRs or continuing resolutions that says, hey, we agree to continue spending this much money times another, I don't know, 5% or 10%, whatever it is, it's insane. And so in any event, it's notable that, you know, even though Mr. Biden likes to continually go out and say that he's reduced the deficit, and of course none of the mainstream or lame stream media, as it might be referred to, is calling him out on this. I mean, it's like he hadn't reduced the deficit. It's gone up more, another $1.7 trillion. By the time he finishes his term, let's see, I believe it's about $6 to $8 billion a day increase. So what would that be? Another, well, I don't know. I can't do that kind of math in my head. It's way too many places to the left of that decimal spot. But anyway, it's a big increase, irrespective of what he may say. And if I've got trouble with the math, I can promise you he does. And but one thing that you can't forget, or because it's going to be on us before you know it, is that the interest on the debt this year, just the interest on the debt, will exceed the $1 trillion mark in terms of the cost. And that's on top of Medicare and Medicaid is about $1.7 trillion, a little bit higher than that. That's of the current year budget. The largest items are the Medicare and Medicaid component at $1.728 trillion. Social Security is $1.39, almost $1.4 trillion. Defense is at $853 billion, and then the interest on the debt by the end of the year will be $1 trillion plus. And so that's a problem when you understand that our total tax revenues are, I shouldn't say revenue, that's a misnomer, and they've got it labeled as revenue too. It's receipts is what it is. It's collections. It is not revenues per se. But anyway, let me just check something here. If I add 1.7, the Medicare piece, to the Social Security piece of 1.4, that's rounded to 0.853 for defense, plus 1.0 for interest. That is a total of $4.9 trillion. So just the top four items in the budget exceed the tax receipts for fiscal year 24, projected tax receipts. And well, I take that back. I shouldn't say that. The tax receipts that I'm looking at on that debt clock is a real-time number, and so I'm not sure what that will look like by September at the end of the year. It'll be more, but it's not going to be enough to eradicate the deficit, because remember, I'm only adding up the top four items. You still got other many billions, and in this case, a couple trillion dollars in deficit out there. But the most troubling aspect of this discussion is if you come down the page right under the section that has the largest budget items, is you got the unfunded debt and interest on the debt, and those are items that Congress has already passed, but they don't include it in the official debt count because they maintain that, well, we could still change it. And so in any event, it's somewhere in the, well, it depends on which set of assumptions you want to use. The U.S. debt clock's assumption, it's approximately another $100 trillion, just another $100 trillion. You know, so what is that in total? It's about $130+ trillion that we're actually committed to unless Congress changes some of the unfunded component. They could maybe raise the Social Security age. They could back off on some of the indexing that happens for inflation. They could cut benefits on assorted fronts. And that's why, theoretically, they don't consider it part of the official U.S. Deficit till they get there. You know, once those rules kick in or those dates kick in, then it will get moved over to the other category. But in any event, again, we alluded to it earlier, what can we do? And if you have pre-tax retirement funds, don't kid yourself. If I ask you, how much do you have in your 401k, and you respond with, well, I've got over $1 million now, I should be in pretty good shape, right? Well, but for your longevity risk and your tax rate risk, those are the two biggest risks that most people headed towards retirement at some point become aware of. So if you're rocking along in your late 40s, early 50s, not giving your retirement wealth a care in the world, you might want to stop and think, what percentage of your retirement funds do you think your partner's going to end up with? And I don't mean your spouse or your otherwise better half. I'm referring to the U.S. government. That's your partner on your retirement funds if they're not already over into the Roth camp. And for those of you that think, well, the rates should be about the same, well, guess again, the Congressional Budget Office back in 2009, when they were tasked with studying this problem and advising Congress on what the tax brackets needed to be adjusted to, came back with a recommendation that they should be increased by 150%. There were three brackets back in 2009. The first one, 10%, would need to go to 25%. The second bracket, the middle one, that was 25% back then, would need to go to 63%. And then the highest bracket at that time was 39.8. That was before you added the Obamacare tax or the net investment income tax of 3.8%. That 39.8% bracket, or 39% bracket rather, I'm sorry, would need to go to 88%. That doesn't count any state taxation if you live in a state with taxes like California or New York, etc. And by the way, that's back when the deficit was only in the $9 to $10 trillion range, and it was when we had only borrowed approximately, I believe it was 35 to 40% of GDP. Well, now we're well past the 100% mark on GDP borrowing. I believe we're about 135%. And they didn't project, CBO didn't project we would pass 100% until the year 2040 to 42. So obviously we've hit the fast forward button to get there, and that's not good. And that leaves us less room to maneuver and to negotiate as we get to the 2029-2030 time frame. And if you think the economy is going to withstand the day that the U.S. government announces they can no longer pay 100% of the interest on the debt, which is going to be that time frame, 2029-2030, I got news for you. It's going to be a depression that affects the country and the world, for that matter, since it's in large measure tied to us, you're not going to be able to sell when you can't sell to finance our exorbitant spending. It'll be a game changer, and we'll see a depression again, the likes of which the world's never seen. And so Congress has to make changes. And the problem is, it's not an easy fix. It's not just taxing the wealthy. It's not just cutting our aid to foreign countries. It's going to be changing systemic policies on what our government is expected to provide its residents. And it's going to be painful. It's going to hurt, but so will a major depression that will occur when you can no longer fund the level of spending that we're doing now. And by the way, the states, for the most part, are all in a similar position. If you want to learn more about states and larger city budget deficits, you can go to Truth in Accounting, I believe is the name of the site, .org. And good site that has very detailed information on specific details with regard to all 50 states and their budgets, and then the larger cities as well. But in any event, I would encourage you to spend some time on these matters. Look at that video out on the BeAPlannerShow.com site from Representative David Swikert of Arizona, and let's talk about your Roth conversions if you have funds that you can do that with. In any event, I thank you for tuning in this week. We'll be back on Sunday at 7 a.m. right here on AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.